What has been your most challenging role so far, if you have one?
I would say, like, aside from Power, because Power was challenging in its own right, but there were, like I said before, my favorite role that I've played is was Levy in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. And I think that was challenging because it was a play and I had to learn the trumpet. So I was like, because we were playing all our music live. And that was, I didn't know one that I could learn how to play trumpet. And it was kind of like a short amount of time, maybe like 2, 3 months. But I had experience playing the trombone, so that contributed to it. But I like the anxiety was like, I know my lines, I know what I got to do, and I know what I got to say, but I don't know if I'm going to have the lip strength to play this, play through the show in the matinee and then play an evening show. By the time I get to the evening show, I don't got it. Like, so yeah, that was probably the most challenging.
Okay, so have you done music before, like choir, anything like that?
No choir, but I played trombone when I was in school. That was probably like one of my favorite things to like, because I love music and I love making music, but I didn't have couldn't afford a trombone on my own. So I was just like, just do it in school. And it was fun. I really enjoyed it. And it kind of, it created, it set let the pathway for me to be able to pick up the trumpet with relative ease because I was familiar with, enough with it. In terms of like having a music background, no, I don't like not no choir, no nothing like that. Yeah, no.
Okay, so I did my research and I saw that you're a writer and you've written some things. Do you ever write like on the side when you're working on a project, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I give all thanks to God because he's been able to cultivate new skills within me, even things that I didn't develop in school. Like he's teaching me that like you don't have to have been doing something since you were a kid and be a prodigy at it in order to cultivate a skill. And whenever I'm on set, I'm always working on something else, like because it's a place of inspiration, right? I'm doing the thing that I want to do in the place I want to do it at. And there's always little things, the way people speak, that can influence dialogue that I write. So I look for inspiration anywhere I can, but whenever I'm like working on set, I'm always trying to work on something that I can like, feed that inspiration into my writing, and it could also feed back into my acting somehow. I don't know. I don't know how it works, but it's just like that creative,
Now, I hate saying I'm a writer because I really don't feel like a writer. I mean, it's kind of like it's a weird title. I've written
Yeah.
some things and published some things, which is cute and all, but I feel like for me as a writer, my hardest, I guess, roadblock is just getting over writer's block, actually. So do you have anything that you struggle with when you're writing?
I did a couple of like classes and workshops, and the main consensus is that writer's block doesn't exist. So there's this book that I recommend because it takes the creative process and it also talks about it from a mental health perspective. And it's called The War of Art. And it talks about things like writer's block and things like, and it's like there is a thing that happens when we go to do our work, and we have to push through those things in order to get to the other side. And it's just resistance. And resistance shows up in different ways and different forms. But it's like you wake up one day and you're like, I'm gonna have to put down 5 pages or do a chapter or whatever have you. And it's like, I don't feel like it today. That's just resistance in your body, right? It's the same thing as going to the gym. It's the same thing as not wanting to go to church on Sunday. Like it's just resistance. And you push through that and you've done your work for the day, right? And so when it comes to writer's block, it's just the same thing, pushing through resistance. You force yourself to sit down and put something on paper. And it could be trash. It could be. But what it does for your brain, what it does for your creative artist, it actually gets out these ideas that were ruminating in your head that were causing resistance in the first place. Okay, so my parents would swear that I don't have ADD, but then at the same time, like I was put on medication for it. So like, who knows? But the way it shows up in me is that like I'll have like, okay, I wanna get to work and I want to, but I got to work out and I got to make food and I got to this. And I'll be walking back and forth in my house being like, wait, I didn't do, wait. And there's, oh, I got to move my phone over here because I got to charge it and my keys don't belong there. And like, I haven't done anything. It's been 10 minutes. You know what I'm saying? That's resistance. And it happens in different ways to people. It shows up in different ways. But like, if you, it's just a matter of like finding a way to get all the noise and distractions out, away from you, whether it is finding a park to go right in, or you know, a coffee shop or whatever, surrounding yourself in a space where you feel like, all right, I can do my work, and as long as I do something, I did it. Yesterday was a big resistance day for me. And I was like, I want to write, but I want to write in the morning. And now it's the afternoon. I can't do it anymore. Like it was just stuff like that that was just showing up. And I actually sat down in front of my laptop and I said, Jesus, help me. And wrote for an hour and some change. And I was like, yay. Yay. Like, that's it. That's all I needed. And like, whatever comes of what I wrote, the result doesn't matter, right? The result doesn't matter. And sometimes the result could be the crippling thing that's preventing you from doing your work. Well, what if people don't like it? What if it doesn't make sense? What if it's trash? What if it's this? What if it doesn't blow up and be a big project that makes me tens of millions of dollars? All these things just contribute to not doing your work and preventing you from showing up. You just gotta sometimes gotta get in front of that laptop, get in front of that phone, whatever it is that's preventing you from doing your work. And do it, and then you'll be like, "Oh wow, I've been here for 3 hours." You know, it some the on the other side of resistance could be like so much inspiration, but you just got to do our work. So writer's block, same thing. Like if you're working on a project or if you're working on whatever, and then you're like, "I don't know, I don't feel inspired. There's nothing coming." What are you thinking right now in that moment? There's nothing coming. Put that down. Boom, 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 boom. You know, there's nothing coming. I'm not thinking of anything. And all of a sudden, okay, this character that I'm writing about, maybe what are they feeling? They may be feeling like nothing's working, nothing's happening. Or they're feeling like nothing's going on in their life. There's nothing's right in their life. Da, 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 da. And then you have like a motivation for that character. Now you have a thought process for that character that you might not have had before. You know, it always shows up in different ways. And once you can get through it, it's like mud. Once you get through it, on the other side of that mud is clean water. I don't know whatever the analogy is. Yeah.
Get through it. I love it. I
Yeah.
love it. That was also really humbling for me. You just kind of like stabbed me in the heart right there, but that's okay.
I needed it too, trust me.
Okay, my next question. What do you look for when you're choosing a project, whether it's a film or the next thing you're writing or producing or what have you?
I've been asking myself that question a lot lately, and it's come up to me now that like, where's the light in the project? You know, where is the light? Where is the light? The sometimes like the world is so dark, and there can be so many things that like can shift our focus onto the darker things that happen. And so when it comes to a project that I'm attaching myself to or a project that I'm writing, I want to find the light in it. To me, that is where is God in the story? Whether it be literal or metaphorical, right? But I believe that a lot of mental health things are spiritual things. So if I'm writing a story that has to do with a character's mental journey, I'm incorporating something about the spirit in there. And when it comes to the way I approach a character, I'm approaching that character from the spirit. And I'm approaching, you know, this project from a spiritual place because that's what I feel like I'm called to do as an artist. You know, that's what I look for is like, how can I shine the light of God through me in this work? And if I can't do it, if I can't justify it in some way, if I'm reading a character and I'm like, this guy's just a dark dude, there's no, you know, not even redeeming qualities, just something that like I believe that people like I want to put forth that it's okay to try something. You know, you've exhausted all options. Try something else. Just try. You know, you can't get out of bed in the morning. Just try. What happens when you try? What happens when you try to get out of bed and then you slip and fall and bash your knee on the ground? Now you got to go to the hospital. You're at the hospital, you meet this nurse. This nurse it turns out to be your best friend. And all of a sudden, now you have a whole new life, you know, because you tried. And that's what I want to put out. That's what I want to encourage in other people. And if there is none of that in this story, then I can, talk to the producer and director and be like, can we incorporate some of that? And if it's like, nah, I want to make this story about this thing that is just dark because it's really real, then I'm like, I'm not the guy to tell that story.
Have you ever had a project that you've had to turn down because God's like, oop, you're not doing that?
And some of them, there's been a couple, and some of them was like, I know this is gonna go. I know the world we live in. I know I can see the writing on the wall. I know like the projects that have been like weird and freaky and this and that have just been like promoted and been the new thing that has been like, going on in the pantheon of film. Because I'm like, oh, well, if I jump on this project, I'll get some shine from it. But it doesn't align with my artist, It doesn't, and like, I just might not, someone's gonna tell the story and then great, they have a nice job, but it won't be me, and that's okay. It took me a long time to be okay with that though, because I'm trying to work like anybody else, but it's about trusting God at the end of the day, And what he has for me is better than what I think is good for me.
Okay, my next question is, what advice do you have for maybe not necessarily young actors, but I guess the youth trying to break into the industry?
Let's see, because let me see if I can give advice without it being something that I'm working on, or, because sometimes people give advice from like what th applies to them right now in that moment. And I'm like, that might not apply to me right now. But there is this sermon that we went to a church in Brooklyn Tabernacle a couple of weeks ago. And it was this verse that he broke down. And it was, his tent dwells in Salem. And he broke down the meaning of that, basically saying the Salem meant peace. And the Lord dwells where there's peace. So you're in Texas, right? You're a young person in Texas. You couldn't wait to get out of school, because whatever going on at in high school was not it for you. From what I've never been to Texas, from what I know about Texas, the landscape, there are places and pockets and places that you can go where there might not be that many people, there might not be that many exterior forces, but there is a lot of nature. There is a lot of quiet, peaceful places. I encourage younger people to get around that more, because there is so much noise and so much distraction that it's hard to recognize what your purpose is. It's hard to hear from God when my phone is constantly going off and I'm constantly stimming on my phone trying to figure out what the next thing is and get that next little dose of whatever it is, funny, pleasure, whatever, right? Get around a quiet space, something that makes you feel peaceful. That is, you can hear the birds, you can hear the animals, you can hear the water, you can hear the trees rustling. You can, if it's desert, get out in the desert, see a little scorpion go by. Whatever it is, just observe the things that are untouched by human influence as much as you can, right? Get away from other people's opinions. Get away from other people's thoughts. Understand what your opinions and thoughts are about something. How do you feel about this music? How do you feel about this movie? How do you feel about your life, yourself? And don't run away from those things. When you're outside in nature, when you're outside in a peaceful environment, let it, not even nature. If you can't get outside and be like, you know what, this place is a little crazy, that's not nature to me. Find a place where you can find peace. Let it be in your closet in your house, right? They talk about having a prayer closet. That's a peaceful place, a place that you carve out for yourself in your home. If there's a bunch of chaos going on in your home, find it somewhere in your car, wherever. You can always find peace because Jesus gives us peace and we got to go take it. That's our job as human beings, to go take the peace that Jesus gives us, right? But sometimes with all the noise and distraction and this and that, all the stuff that goes on, it can be hard to even find his peace. So I encourage people to go out and seek his peace. And when you seek it, you'll understand more of yourself, understand more about what you're thinking, what you're feeling, your voice. You can hear from God clearer. The things that you've gone through, you can now understand a little bit better, sit with, which is scary to do, when I was coming up, there were a lot of like crazy things happening in my house, and I didn't give myself time to sit with none of that. And when I did get time to sit with it, it was a lot easier for me to process and understand and be safe to get around my friends and family and be encouraged to process that with them. I also had an environment that encouraged processing feelings, but not everybody is like that. I just feel like if you can get around an environment in a space that you can understand what's going on inside of you and not be afraid of it, you'll be better for it going on, going forward. Anxiety, all those kind of things that we feel on a day-to-day basis, and everybody's dealing with anxiety in some form, shape or fashion. It's like, if I can get around a peaceful environment where I can understand what is causing that anxiety, where is it coming from? Where am I feeling it in my body? For me, it's my stomach. Where am I feeling it in my body? What is bringing that to the surface? If I notice that when I pick up my phone and I look at it and I'm like, now my stomach's tight, something in my phone made me feel that way. There was a time where I was feeling peaceful, and then I did something in between, and now I don't feel that way anymore. What was that? And don't be afraid to figure what that thing out is and remove it. Don't be afraid to remove it. If it's the phone, remove it. If it's the thing on the phone, remove it. Whatever it was, get it out of there and see how you feel afterwards.
Switching topics a little bit. Okay, so I did some deep diving also on IMDb beforehand. So you've also produced some films. So I'm curious, I always have to ask because I understand what producing is, but I like what's the difference between an executive producer and a co-producer? Like, what do you do in those different positions?
It all depends on what the job description is for that executive versus the co-producer. So sometimes an executive is in name only, right? Like you've attached yourself to the project. You being attached to it now gets more butts in seats. So that's all you had to do. Sometimes it's a financial contribution. Sometimes it is, you've helped attach a star. You've helped attach a director. You've helped to bring somebody on board that could position the film in a better way, and that could get you an executive producer credit. As a producer or co-producer, you're a little bit more hands-on in making the movie. You're helping put the pieces together. Most of the time, producers are there from the beginning, right? And you're helping bridge those gaps. You're basically making the movie from scratch. Right, you're attaching the talent, you're scouting locations, you're making sure you're having conversations with the director about the script and about how you're going to make this thing better for a cheaper amount of money, whatever it has you. An executive producer is a little bit more outside. They don't have to get into all that stuff. It's a little bit more challenging and more exhausting to get into the whole production part of it, but attaching this executive producer could shine more light on the film. It could bring more attention to it. It could help you get that film into a festival or so and so. Those are the two like the major differences between. There's like more nuanced stuff, but that's like the major difference.
Okay, so also according to IMDb, where I did my research, did you just wrap up a film, Mayday?
Yeah, that was last year. That was last year. Yeah.
Oh, okay. It said post-production, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, I mean, you can be in post-production for a while, but we did that last year in Quebec, and it was absolutely wonderful.
See, my little high school films, when it's post-production, it takes like a month. So I forget that actual post-productions can go on for some time.
Yeah, it all depends on what you're trying to do. Like if you're trying to make a deadline for a film festival, then your post-production turnaround could be like 2 months. And if you're trying to just make sure that the movie is just, you're not worried about film festivals and deadlines, you're just trying to make this movie be the best it could be, it could take a year, 2 years.
Okay, so what can you, I know it's not out yet because it's in post-production, but what can you share about that film? What was it like shooting?
It was wonderful. I got to work with Ryan Reynolds, and he's so nice and so generous. And I got to bond with him over the fact that we're both Canadian. And we both at the time lived in New York. So I was putting them onto some cookie game. I love cookies. I'm a cookie guy. Ask my wife. She's like, he's a cookie monster. So I'm like, if you like cookies, you gotta go to Chip City. And he was like, oh, I haven't been to Chip City yet. So next time I see him, I'm like, did you go? That's my plan. But he was so nice, so lovely. And he really taught me about the value of older cinema. That was something that I want to incorporate into my life more, and my wife as well, is like watching like Turner Classics and, you know, putting myself on a game about like just like the beginnings of film and the value that has within our industry and what we're trying to do.
Okay. My next question is, do you have any mentors that have helped you kind of on your journey, whether it's just like your faith, whether it's an agent or someone like that?
I have a few mentors. I look for mentors actively. I'm like, you know, how can I? You're doing something that I want to do. Would you be so kind as to be my mentor? Like, you know, so sometimes I'll ask that straight out. But Olunike Adeyeli, she is a wonderful mentor of mine from Toronto. She's a fantastic artist. She was just nominated for a Canadian Screen Award. She's just like, she's the best. She's a powerhouse actress. She's so talented, and she just loves taking actors under her wing and like just putting us on game. She constantly like grows as a person. She went to school like while she was acting. Like, she was doing the most. Like, she's the definition of the more you do, the more you can do. And I love her for that. Another one, Emmanuel Kamongo. He's a big mentor of mine, also from Toronto, spiritual guide as well. He's like, his name is Emmanuel, you know, God with us. So like, he's such a devout Christian, and he's such a loving, warm heart, and he's very generous with his time. He's teaching kids right now basketball, I believe. Like, he's just like, yeah, he's a wonderful guy, and he's helped me a lot in my career. He taught me a lot about what it is to be like a young black actor coming up in Toronto and just like carving out a space for myself. Michael Ealy is a big mentor of mine. He's a wonderful guy. Just to work opposite him and just understand like the autonomy you could have as an artist, like speaking up for myself, giving a voice. 50 Cent, a mentor of mine as well. And that was crazy because he was my favorite rapper growing up. So I'm like listening to all his stuff. I know every word to every song. Get Rich or Die Trying, The Massacre, Curtis. I know every word. And then I'm working with him, and he's putting me on game. I'm like, whoa! Like, I never knew. You know what I mean? Like, you couldn't tell me at like in high school that I would have been mentored by this guy. Mary is a great mentor as well. She is. When we got engaged, my wife and I, she was like, you know, she. It was like, enjoy your engagement, you know, don't rush to like think you have to jump from getting engaged to getting married. Enjoy this time being engaged. And we really did. We really just sat in it, and then we're able to just like feel each other out and communicate with each other and really cultivate a good friendship before getting married, which was nice. But she's a big mentor of mine as well. Lovely human being, beautiful, wise woman. Woody Latoya, you can have a mentor and they be the same age as you, by the way. Just that's something that like I something that I had to like, oh, you can do that? I didn't know that. But yeah, Woody and Latoya, my brother and sister, like they're just, I love them so much because they really are generous with their time, and they're generous with their words, and they're uplifting, they're pouring into people, yeah, very. Just sometimes, like, a mentor is a person that is doing the same thing you're doing and not afraid to tell you what they did to do that thing, you know, or how they got there, or that process, or like they're very vulnerable with their process and showing you, like, yo, this is what he right now is doing a Kickstarter, right? And he's showing you step by step what it is, what he's learning as he's doing the Kickstarter. And like, I'm sorry, and there's not a lot of people that are generous with their time and vulnerable with their time to be doing that and putting people on game like that. So yeah, those are my mentors. I actively seek out mentors. I will not stop being mentored even when I'm 90.
I love that, actively seeking mentors.
Yeah. Always learn. Always, always, always.
Always learn. I love that. Okay. My next question is, do you have an I made it moment yet?
Yeah, I would say maybe the first premiere or maybe the last premiere. Like either the premiere for season one of Ghost or this premiere for season four of Ghost. One of them, we were doing red carpet stuff and people were asking me questions and wanted to know what I thought about things. And I was like, oh. Or maybe it was, oh, no. It was when I was with my family. My family came to New York to visit and we went to a radio show and they got to see me do my thing. And that was like, wow, they're getting to see me get interviewed and like see their son. You know what I mean? Like, that was like, all right, like I'm bringing my parents around and stuff. And they're like, oh, look at this. Like, you know, like, yeah, that was it for me for sure.
I'm curious, what do you have any current obsessions? Like me, I am currently obsessed with, well, I'm obsessed with a lot of things. I really like the show We Were Liars. I'm obsessed with books. Like, I'm just curious, is there anything that you're like, oh, I love this, like right now?
Yes, I'm obsessed with climbing, with bouldering right now. You ever heard of that? You know what that is?
Yes, I,
It's
oof.
fun. It's really fun. Indoor only. I only do indoor.
Oh, okay.
I only do that. So it's like really fun. The progression is really nice to feel it in your body and see it, the results of things. And yeah, I'm always a bit of video game guy. But and so I love video games and I'm always checking for the latest whatever. Mortal Kombat, big fan. All the trust me, like I can nerd out about games all the time. Like I can't I'm I just like it was Sunday and so I'm like I'm a little bit older now and I'm trying to like give myself more responsibility so I'm not constantly at home just gaming, but I could just game all day and it's an activity in my mind to like not do that. So I'm trying to be less obsessed with gaming and more obsessed with like active things. So that's,
Okay.
yeah, that's me rewiring my brain to like, I'm more obsessed with climbing than I am with gaming at home.
Okay. Gaming, just super quick. I used to be obsessed with The Last of Us and ooh, the Batman video game.
The Arkham Asylums and Arkham Knights and Arkham Cities, all that.
All of it. It was like you couldn't tell me anything. That was
Such
me.
well-made games. All of those games you just listed, all such well-made, well thought out. The Last of Us, chef's kiss. Like, come on, you
Like
know. And
it's
it's my dream to be like to do a game. It's my dream as an actor to do a game. Like, if I could just combine my two loves of acting and gaming and be in a game and like do that and play that game and show my children, God willing, like your dad's in this game. Like, look at that. Like, I did it. That's another I made it moment. Haven't done it yet, but yeah.
See, but that's cool. See, I didn't get into video games until my dad started getting into video games, and I was like, hey, why are you like not hanging out with me? Like, where are you going? And then he was like, oh, I'm playing these games. And then it was like switched. I was gaming all the time, and then he couldn't get on the game because I was always there. It was I was like, this is actually your fault. Sorry, dude.
Yeah, I know that's going to be an inevitability for me. Like, I mean, unless our kids don't want a game, but yeah, my dad passed gaming on to me, and I want to pass it on to our kids.
It's a legacy thing. It really is.
Yeah,
Yeah.
totally.
Okay. I'm curious, what has been like your biggest obstacle within your journey? Like, doesn't have to be an acting thing, but like, what's been your biggest like roadblock so far? And how'd you overcome it?
I think. Not having the control of my career. That is a challenge. I can't even lie to you. It's, you know, being a man and wanting to like fulfill that role of being a leader and provider and all that stuff, but still having to like wait for people to say yes to you and validate you in that way, but then also not needing validation is like this dance that is constantly being done in my mind. And it's an obstacle that is a continue thing that, you know, it's an ongoing obstacle that on day to day, week to week, I feel strong. I feel like overcoming it. I feel like I don't need to wait on someone else to choose me. And then there's sometimes where I'm like, wow, like I feel like I gotta wait on someone else to choose me. And Scripture really helps. Reminding myself of the things that God says about me, it really helps because I'm not no longer leaning on others for my value. And also having people around me that love me, that pour into me really helps. And then also feeling like I don't need to be paid to do what I want to do in order to still enjoy what I'm doing. And that is not easy to take in as like a young guy. Because a young guy, I'm like, no, I'm trying to do it, I'm trying to do it. You know what I mean? But as I'm like, if I take away, if money didn't exist or if we didn't need money to do what we wanted to do would I still love acting? And the answer is yes. So then do it. So then do it, right? Or like, would I still love screenwriting if like it didn't matter if you made a movie or not, like because everyone's making movies and it's not that hard. Would you still want to go do it? Yes. So then do it now, right? Like, it's like it can be that simple. That clarity does come. And then some days I'm like, I can't see it.
So my next question is, how do you choose a management agency? How do you choose those people to manage you?
That's a good question. A lot of it is vibe. A lot of it is, how they align with what you're looking for, and being confident in knowing what you're looking for. So when I first started out, I had met with an agent, and she was wonderful, and she was so nice and personal and so lovely. And then signed with her immediately, and she felt like a teacher, like a very familiar, like kindergarten energy. Like she could be a kindergarten teacher. And then she left to go teach kindergarten. And then the person that took over after her has been my agent since then. And she is absolutely wonderful. And I love her to this day. She's like my ride or die. And the team I have now, along with her, they've been great and they've been well selected. And I had a manager before that helped me get my team sorted on this side. And then I have a new manager now, and I feel like we work really well together and we get great opportunities together. I think it's all about like just again being confident about what you're looking for and knowing when it may be time to go for something new.
Yeah, I love that because I don't know anything about agents or things. My agent is probably my mother if I had
They
one.
never take money before you get paid. So if you ever meet with an agent, because there's a lot of scams out here, but there's like the legit ones you find on like IMDb and stuff. You know what I mean? Like you find there in Toronto, we had like this list of all the agencies that were a part of like kind of like a union for the agents. So you would know that they're like real legit agents. And they never asked a real agent never asked for money up front. So if you ever sign with an agency and they're like, yeah, I just paid $500 to go take this class with run for the hills. An agent gets paid after you get paid. They take commission off of what you make. So they find you an audition and then you land that job and then you make the money. You've negotiated a rate that they get 15, 20% off of the stuff you make. And that's it. Then later on down the line, when you make a bunch of money, you can change those numbers and see like, okay, if you get me an endorsement, we can, it all changes later on too, but like that you never pay them up front. I almost learned the hard way. Yeah. When I was in the first year of college, I started taking agent meetings at like during the summer, and they were asking me for money up front. And I was like, but aren't you a little, I had no reference to think that they weren't a legitimate agency because they were an agency for acting and modeling. So I was like, and I knew people that were with them and they were like legit in the city and stuff, but they were asking me to like pay for these classes and take these classes with them and all this stuff. And then I was like, let me just wait. So I went to second year and we had a business of acting class. And we were able to ask all the questions we wanted to know. And they were like, yo, you never pay anything up front. And I was like, great. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's all I need to know. Any actor, young actor starting out, and if they ever ask me for advice, I always go, never pay nothing up front. Like for an agent specifically. Like classes are different. Acting classes separate. And there are some acting classes that are tied to like casting directors and stuff like that, which is controversial. But then it gets to, yeah, that gets to a whole different thing. I don't necessarily think that's bad, but that's just me. I don't see the, it's actually helped me sometimes. So it's not, you know what I mean? Because like acting is about connections and networking, and it's like, yes, you're talented, but also like, you know, making, building relationships. So if you can build relationships through an acting class, I think that's beneficial for you. But you also have to be able to afford an acting class, and they're expensive. So it's all that. It's all that. There's a whole thing that goes into it.
You were talking about networking, and I'm curious, how has networking impacted you on your career, and how do you encourage others to network themselves?
Always find an opportunity to act. There are opportunities to act outside of just auditioning and trying to get a job, right? There's community theater, there's, you know, general auditions for at theaters in your local theater, big houses that hold general auditions in your city, depending on where you're at. There are, coming up in Toronto, there was a thing called the Monologue Slam. And it was a competition where actors would get together and they would all have competing monologues, and the audience would, you know what I mean? It was like this fun, interactive thing. And they would get casting directors to come and be like judges, and agents to come and be judges, and acting coaches to come and be judges. And it was just like such a great experience. And that one helped my confidence as an actor. It helped me. I swore that I was like a play type of, I did theater. Like I was like, I do theater because I did like four of these competitions. And I look back, I'm like, I hadn't done one play. But I was just doing so many like the competitions with these play monologues that I was like, yeah, I swear, like I come from theater. And I'm like, wait, look back, I'm like, well, damn, that's not really true, but kind of. You know, like I didn't plays in high school, but you know what I mean? So it was like, it made me feel so confident and it helped me. But then at the same time, it was a great showcase of my work. And so I got to meet the casting directors and meet the agents and meet these people. And then I would get an audition for something that they're casting because they saw my work right there. And it was such a great way to build a network. And then, you know, there's in Toronto, there's TIFF. I'm sure there's like, you know, there's great festivals in Texas and like all over this country. So being able to go there, if you have access to those things, there's the Austin Film Festival as well. That is like fantastic. But going there, you know, having something to showcase and being able to communicate with others and build, like Issa Rae said, build across, like build with your people instead of trying to reach up is like, you'll find like-minded people that are trying to make great projects and may not have all the resources, but have the talent, have the heart, have the openness and curiosity to not worry about failing and just focus on making dope stuff. And you'll find a great community that way.
Okay, I'm going back to like my Christ questions and things like that. So how do you maintain your relationship with God when you're in those not necessarily chaotic places, but when you're on set and you're busy and you're working? Like, how do you maintain that relationship?
When on set, I always bring a book. I bring my Bible with me. It's the first thing like I put down. I try to anyways. Like it's like sometimes I'll be forgetting, but if I'm ever on set and I'm like, I didn't bring my Bible today, I'm wilding. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because I'm sometimes I'm like, I'll be on my phone on set or like in my trailer, and I'm like, how dare I be on my phone before I go on my Bible? You know what I mean? So things like that, like hit buck me up ahead, in my head sometimes. I'm like, I gotta make sure that like this goes first. And so I've been better at that over the years. On Power specifically, I was able to like really cultivate a stronger relationship with Jesus than ever before in my life, because everything about it was so divine and so like God led that I was like, I have to, you know, give him all the glory and thanks and praise. So while I'm here, like it was, you know, first thing first, like my Bible's on the desk and like I read that and then I start putting my clothes on and then I start like prepping for the day. But like that was something that was really like great. And it was like having my heart open because I've been able to start the day with the Lord. Now every interaction following that is a beautiful interaction. So now, because you're on set and there's a bunch of people, right? And it's sometimes like the people that you see yesterday that you never saw before and or haven't seen in like a year, or like there's a new person. And so there's just a lot of people, a lot of information, and you got to know your lines, you got to know what you're doing, you got to know, be able to stand here. So it can be chaotic, but being able to just start the day with the word and then being like, all right, now I can breathe, now I can relax, now I can focus. Every interaction my like is from Jesus, recognizing that if my house is the temple of God, so is yours. So I don't have no beef with you. I don't have no like, I'm not trying to, you're not trying to compete with me. I'm not trying to compete with you. I'm not trying to, you know, downgrade your day for anything, and you're not trying to downgrade my day. How can I make your day better? How can I make this crew member feel good? Okay, I'm noticing that maybe the energy is a little lagging today because we're super tired and we're overworked. All right, like maybe we can bring some vibes, some laughter, some music, some jokes, some snacks. I was the guy who would always, me and Latoya actually would get the food trucks, and we would get I got Chip City, I think twice or once. But you know, just bringing the cookies by, and like everyone loves cookies, man. So it's just like, yeah, like having a good time. And it turned an environment that could be chaotic, that could be full of pressure, into such a wonderful, beautiful experience. And like for the 4 years that we were on that show, it was just like wonderful, you know. But yeah, that's on set. Maintaining peace in a chaotic environment is definitely bring the Bible everywhere I go. Like I try to bring the Bible wherever I go. If I'm going to an interview, if I'm going, even meeting with like agents and stuff like that, like having my manager meetings, I would have my Bible in my bag. You know, because like this is like it's a shield now. Like it's my shield. Yeah, it's always, I know there's like smaller Bibles and pocket Bibles and things like that, but it's always important to like feel like you can armor yourself with the word, you know, and just not to wield it against anyone, but just to know that like if anyone says anything that might take you off your square, or might make you feel less than, or might make you feel question yourself or question your abilities, you can just wait a minute, hold on, that's not true because God says this. And you know, like God actually says this about me. And if you're ever feeling like, man, like you're all alone and you have no one's taking care of you, or no one sees your plight or sees your worries, actually, God said he sees all that, and he holds you by your right hand, and he takes care of you. He never leaves you, never forsakes you. Oh yeah, let me go out and be great now. Like, you know what I'm saying? It truly is like, it truly is armor. Like, you know, truly is.
Okay, I have to know which version do you have, because
So I have two. I have the NKJV, and I have I'm sorry, the NJ, what the what? New King James Version. Yeah. So NKJV, and I have a New Living Translation, but I don't read that as much. But I like the King James Version. So the King James Version was given me by my grandpa. So that's the one I read, right? And then when he passed away, I inherited his New King James Version. So I just read that. That's the one I have. And that one isn't falling apart, so I can actually like take it with me wherever I go, and you know, all that. But yeah, I just I feel like, and this is gonna be weird, but I feel like when I read the New King James Version, it helps me understand Shakespeare better. And I don't know how, you know what I mean? But hey, whatever.
that makes perfect sense. My grandma, before she passed, she gave me a King James Version Bible, and it was like monogrammed with my name on it. And I remember I opened it after she passed, and I was like, "What am I? What? What?" The sentiment is nice. I can't read this right now. So I have hers, the one that she gave me, and then I think I have NIV, which is a lot more graceful for me personally, because
That it's helpful to like be able to break it down to where you can understand it, you know. But it's also important to ask the Holy Spirit to help you when you're reading, because sometimes like it'll be things that even in the New Living Translation you might buck up against, that might not resonate with you, or you might not understand what that, how that applies to you. and then asking Jesus to send the Holy Spirit and make sure that you can actually understand it. He might open your eyes in a new way that you can see it, right? Whether it's the old translation or the new one, there's going to be something in there that like may hit your spirit in a way that you get it without actually having to understand it in your brain. It just clicks all of a sudden. Now you're moving different and you can't point to why. I was like, it was because that. Now you truly understand it, right? Because there's so there's this I always say there's this understanding, then there's this understanding. Right? There's this understanding. I know it here, but like now knowing it truthfully, you can sit in that, right? Like when you're
Yes.
a baby, you're learning how to walk. You know the mechanics of how to walk, but you don't get it yet. And then as you get older and you like understand how to walk, like you're walking like it's nothing.
That's a word right there. Okay, next question. What advice do you give for, I guess, artists as a whole when God puts you in that season of waiting?
Let's see. This is something that I can be like, all right, this is what I'm working on right now, and I'm gonna give it to y'all. But surround yourself with people who inspire you, who uplift you, who love you genuinely and unconditionally, and who want to see you win. Cultivate that in yourself as well, right? You're never competing with another actor. As much as toxic people make you think you are, you're not. You may get on a set where someone's trying to steal your screen time and trying to be a quote unquote scene stealer. That stuff is all, it's like, it goes into the category of like what gossip would be and what rumors are. Like, you don't need to entertain that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? Whenever you show up and do your work, trust that God is guiding you to do your work. You never have to worry about the result, where it's going to lead you, where it's going to go. People doing weird stuff here and there, and it doesn't affect you because you're moving forward and you're like, yeah, I'm locked in on what I'm doing. In the in-between time, it's the same thing. It's making sure that you're surrounding yourself with people that make you understand that you're not in competition with others. Because when you're auditioning for things and you're hearing no's, or you're not hearing anything, or you're hearing, wow, that was wonderful, you're so amazing, like, we'll definitely talk to you soon, and then you don't hear nothing, like, those things can start to weigh on you. And then when you see other actors winning, it might make you feel bitter and grow resentment in your heart. And remember, it's not a competition. Remember that God only elevates. And so when he is positioning someone else in a season to win, he's also positioning you in a season to win. And it just takes time. There is no such thing as your prime. There is no such thing as what's the other thing? Like being like the timing of like what the timeline of like when you want to do things as an be the first youngest actor to do this. And they're always trying to make you feel like you got to be young to do something. And it's like, well, that can make you feel like you're out of your moment as soon as you hit a certain age. Look at all the young Hollywood stars and the ones that are growing up now who are still fighting for that spot to feel like they're good enough at whatever age they're doing that. Because you're never gonna feel good enough if you're gonna be subjecting yourself to that. So in the meantime, between time, cultivate a space and an energy and a people that you can pour into and that pour into you, that make you feel loved, supported, guided. Always work on your craft. There's always ways to master your craft that don't have to apply to you actually getting a job. It could be you reading plays every day. Read the August Wilson Century Cycle. There's 10 of them. You do that. You read 10 plays for the summer. Like, wow, that's amazing. You know what I'm saying? Read the Tennessee Williams. Arthur Miller's. Like, just read other plays that aren't just black, right? Those offer you a new perspective as well. Those also show you how you're going to be interacting with other actors who aren't only black actors, right? It's a pantheon of creativity that we have all been able to lend our voices to, and we can all absorb and learn something from. And I guarantee that when you go to your next job or your next audition, you'll be better for it because you're more informed, you're more prepared, you're more equipped, and you have renewed perspectives. And enjoy the time you have with your loved ones. Be present with people around you because that is the way that you will grow in your artist.
Okay, my last closing question is if you could give any piece of advice to your younger self when you were starting out, what would it be?
I would say it's okay. Like, trust that where you're going is where you're going to get to. And don't worry about the result of things. Don't worry about don't worry, period. But just do more to understand who Jesus is in your life from even earlier. And share that with your loved ones, people around you more. When it comes to acting and your work and your dreams, that will come. Trust that it will come. You're going to get to where you're going regardless. Don't be afraid to take risks and keep taking risks. Keep putting yourself out there. Keep going to the monologue slams and socializing with your friends and loved ones and family. Keep writing. That's another thing I would say. Keep writing. Because I have some ideas from back then that I don't remember anymore because I stopped working on them. So keep writing and be encouraged to promote and share that you're a writer and share that you have this part of your vessel as well that is being used. But most of all, just enjoy the time that you're in Canada with your friends because there will be a time where you haven't been back to Canada in a minute and it's like it feels like you're on your purpose and on your path, which is fine, but also it's family back at home, you know what I mean? So I say that, enjoy that time more.
See, look, that was great. Best interview I've had.
For me as well.
I really, really appreciate this. I'm probably gonna get off here and cry because I cry when I'm excited about things and I'm just overjoyed. But I really am I'm so grateful that you took the time to help me record and to also let me interview you and share this with other people.
Thank you so much for reaching out. I really appreciate it. And this was so lovely. Good luck with the new school, right? Yeah, first year of college, right? University. Have fun. And yeah, I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye.